back from EDUCAUSE. This is the ERICAST for the week of October 23, 2005.
From ERICAST.com.
ERICAST.com.
Welcome to the ERICAST.
Well, hello, and thank you for listening to the ERICAST. I am Eric Larson, your host, hence the name ERICAST. And I am so happy that you tuned in. In fact, I say that sincerely because I'm getting more listeners. So I know the handful, the tiny handful, if you have small hands, you know, toddler-sized hands, my daughter's handful of listeners that I once had, but there are more people popping up. So do tell your friends that, hey, tune into the ERICAST and listen to the miscellaneous ramblings of a dweeb, dweeb thoughts. ERICAST.com, that's E-R-I-C-A-S-T. .com. Though if you really want to put two C's in there, it'll get you there because I invested $6.95 in a on-sale domain name from GoDaddy, not a sponsor of the ERICAST. So that'll get you there, but it is ericast.com with one C. Send me an email, eric@ericast.com would work out just peachy keen. Or it's not really an or because you could do both. You could do both at once on the same topic. You could pick and choose depending on how you want to interact with me and the program. You can call our listener feedback line, which is based out of a service in Seattle. I'm not in Seattle. I'm in the beautiful Twin Cities metropolitan area. But in Seattle, there's a service called K7.net. And they have a phone number, which is area code 206-339-ERIC. That's 206-339-3742. If you've got minutes left on your cell phone for the month or whatever, use those to call over there, and that would make it a free call for you. But yes, long-distance charges may apply. So do call. We would love to hear from you. And in fact, later in the show, we're going to have some more listener feedback commenty stuff. Going back to Brandon's comments that I really couldn't address with any sort of, you know, anything. Any integrity or value or contribution last week because I was rushing off to EDUCAUSE. And I'm back from EDUCAUSE. I am so glad to be back. So happy to be in this time zone. As I mentioned in one of my ERICAST updates, phoned in as I was trying to make my way back home. And I was in the Atlanta airport because I was flying AirTran. And AirTran flies almost everything through Atlanta. I'm never going to fly or take a taxi ever again. I will not tell you my taxi story. I got ripped off by a cab driver. Not horribly, you know, I mean, not like I was, you know, bruised and battered and beaten or whatever, just overcharged and lied to. Well, lied to and overcharged is kind of the order in which it happened. What was sort of interesting, actually, is flying out of Orlando. Once again, AirTran flies almost everything through Atlanta, but not quite everything. And they were overbooked on their flight coming out of Orlando, so they said, hey, we'll take voluntary passengers, you know, people to volunteer to take a different flight. Okay. They said, well, the problem, though, is we don't have any other flights going to Atlanta. But we do have three direct flights out. And I don't remember what a couple of them were, but they were all equally stellar destinations. And I do specifically remember that one of the direct flights was from Orlando to Flint, Michigan. Now, I don't know Flint, Michigan, other than Michael Moore's Roger and Me about the auto industry and shutting down Flint or whatever. Flint, I'm sure, has it. I'm sure it's a wonderful town. I'm sure it has beautiful places in it or whatever. I'm sure the people, being human beings, are good people in Flint. But man, I mean, who wants to fly Orlando to Flint? You know, I don't know how many takers AirTran had. You know, people jumping up and down. Ooh, yeah, I don't need to connect to a flight. Forget that. I want to take a vacation to Flint. Wow. And I don't remember the other two places, but they were, as I say, they were equally appealing. But we managed to get out, and that was good. So here I am, glad to be back, never leaving. So what did I see? What's the EDUCAUSE summary? Hard to summarize 3 days in just a couple minutes, especially to an audience who probably doesn't care about the details, but I will touch on a couple things. Pretty much everything is Flash. All development, what's the output of this product, blah, 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 it's Flash. Now, this has been going for a few years, and when Flash first came out, I was thinking, what's the big deal? And the more I deal with various things that aren't cross-platform and don't really work, the more I realize, actually, Flash isn't all that bad. It really is. Works on a Mac, works on a PC, works on my Ubuntu Linux box that's downstairs running an old 333 megahertz Celeron. It works. It's slow, but it works. At our institution, we have purchased Macromedia Breeze, which is kind of a combination of something like, you know, WebEx or other online chatty sort of meeting, live meeting things. Probably like GoToMeeting. Also not a sponsor of the Aracast. And the other half of it are things like Microsoft PowerPoint Producer or Empatica or whatever that take your PowerPoints, maybe Camtasia or Contribute. They take your PowerPoints and turn them into the slides with the talking head in the corner and the index. You know, we've all seen things like that. And if you haven't, well, go out and find something like that because it's a good bit of technology. So that's what Breeze does. Well, Breeze, of course, being a Macromedia product, is all Flash. Now, who knows now that Adobe owns Macromedia, what's going to happen to Flash? But point being, more and more things are actually either producing Flash output or saying, we promise we're producing Flash output soon. One of those is Ovation from Serious Magic. I got to see a demo movie. They were not demoing the product. The product's apparently in beta and is supposed to come out soon, but hasn't come out yet. And it basically takes your PowerPoint and makes it fancier with all the good graphic stuff that the folks from Serious Magic can do. Are the makers of Visual Communicator, which is kind of a little studio in a box. It does live green screening. You talk to the camera with a green screen in your back. It drops in some fancy background. You can roll in video clips. It has a teleprompter feature, that kind of thing. So that's what they make, and they're making this thing called Ovation, which is basically going to take your PowerPoints and spiff them up. The other thing I saw, this I'm really looking forward to. It's all open source. I don't remember who... I think they're out in California because they dealt with the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art. It's a product called Pachyderm, as in elephant, and the metaphor being, you see, they explain the metaphor. The metaphor is that Hindu parable of the blind men feeling the elephant, and one feels a leg and says an elephant's like a tree, and the other feels a tail and says the elephant's like a rope, and obviously they're all feeling the same thing, they're just seeing different aspects of it, which is an interesting parable. It can be stretched to be... to some incorrect conclusions, I think, but in the sense of this program, that's their metaphor for different learning models. So it has these templates built into it, and you dump your content in, you apply a template, and out comes Flash. So actually, if you browse around the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art site, you'll see some of the stuff done with Pachyderm. So that's coming, and I'd kind of like to play with that, because that's a good way of putting content together. I don't know. The other thing that I saw, and years ago I thought this was cool, and I still think it's cool to the point that I might actually go on eBay and pick up a cheap version of the version one of this technology. Is a thing called Mimio. I believe it's spelled M-I-M-I-O as opposed to M-I-M-E-O. It's a whiteboard attachment. So you suction cup this thing to your whiteboard. It's a bar, and you stick it up on the whiteboard. Official sound effect. See? Stick the suction cups on there. And then you use their special little whiteboard marker thingies, and somehow it has some ultrasonic sensor or something, and it senses where you're drawing, and it dumps that all into the computer. So as you draw on the whiteboard, it appears on the computer. Now, there have been whiteboards around that have done this for years. That's fine. But the great thing is their brand new one, the version 2, the Mimio X or IX or something, is like $600. And it'll stick to any whiteboard. The original one, I think, used to retail for like $200 or $300. It came out in 99, 2000, something like that. And those are real cheap. I don't know if they work or not, but they're way cheap now. So that's something kind of interesting to sort of play with, back to that whole supporting learning and how do you capture teaching and all those things I've been talking about for ages. So that was Mimio, an interesting kind of thing to see the live demo, because, hey, the sucker works. You know, that's good. And I had commented, I think actually this was in my blog, emlarson.com. Click on the little blog link. That'll take you over to my Blogspot blog. I was going to comment on three vendors or vendor-type things that were not at EDUCAUSE and should have been. And I would love to know if any of you know about any of these technologies because I want to play with them, and I could have played with them if these people had been at EDUCAUSE. One of them is a device called the iSKIE, I-S-K-I-E, from a company called iMATT, I-M-A-T-T-E. Apparently, iMATT was spun off from Ultimat, the company that was the company in green screening. This is a little device that attaches to your LCD projector. It has infrared lights on it, so it splashes the screen with infrared light, which, of course, the human eye can't see. It then has a camera in it that's reading that infrared light. When you step in front of the screen to illustrate a point in your PowerPoint or whatever, it says, "Hark! That's not a screen, that's a person," or something. I don't know, cat, pointer, flying bird, whatever, doesn't matter. Something is in front of the screen. And so it does the little difference check thing and says, well, I don't want to be projecting on top of that. And this ties in line with your computer feed to the projector, and it masks out where you're standing. So basically, there isn't any light shining on you or in your eyes as you step in front of the screen. I think that's really cool, because you know how people walk in front of the screen to illustrate a point, and they've got half the bar graph splashed across their face, and I mean, it just looked kind of goofy and stupid. Plus, if you're the one presenting, that's bright, you know? That's a lot of bright light shining in your eyeballs. So, it's a cool thing, but one of those things you really have to kind of see to believe or understand or see how well it works, and so I'd like to see a demo of it, but I don't know. They're not around. They're not at these shows. The other thing, and this isn't just one vendor, this is several. Before I die someday, I would like to see an auto-stereoscopic LCD monitor. What am I talking about? Well, there are several companies. One of them, I think, is the DTI. I think Sharp makes one. Pioneer has some basically, you do a search on this. They take a lenticular screen. And you might have seen lenticular art. There's even a store in the Mall of America that sells both holographic art and lenticular art. The little flash cards, flicker cards that we had when we were a kid, where as you tilt the card, the picture changes. You know, I've got an old Pac-Man mug where as you tilt it, you know, Pac-Man moves along and chomps on the ghosts. You know, that kind of thing. Well, that's a lenticular screen, so that each eye, or as the angle, and those, as the angle changes, the picture changes. Okay, so what's actually, the card is a bunch of stripes, you know, stripey kind of card. And then as the angle on it changes, you see one picture or the other. Well, you can have a three-dimensional lenticular picture because they space those two angles out to match the distance between your eyes. So your left eye sees one picture, your right eye sees the other picture, poof, three-dimensional if you design the picture right. Well, these companies have applied that technology to LCD monitors. It couldn't work with CRT monitors because with the CRT, you don't know where any given pixel really is going to be. You can get pretty close, but close doesn't cut it. With an LCD, you know exactly where that picture is. So they took these screens and applied these lenticular screens on top of them, and that way you have an LCD monitor that can display three dimensions without needing any polarized glasses, no special goggles, no nothing. You walk up to it and you're seeing three-dimensional stuff on the screen. Sounds really, really cool. Well, it's kind of hard to describe, you know, and frankly, describing it on a podcast isn't really much worse than describing it on a web page or showing some still pictures of it. You need to stand in front of one to see it. And I was really surprised that nobody in all the booths I walked by, walking in circles hours on end on the show floor, no one had one. I mean, if I were a vendor, I would buy one of these things because, boy, people would gather around and say, oh, that's so cool. I mean, even if I was selling paper clips, I'd make sure that my display monitor had 3D paper clips, you know, flipping and twirling and giving you advice in word processors, you know, good paper clips in 3D. Nobody had anything like that. So I don't know if it's all talk and no action, that you can't really buy one. They're all just in research. They really don't work that well. If no one's thought about it, if this is a brilliant idea of mine that just hasn't been capitalized upon, I don't know. I would have liked to have seen one, but couldn't see one. And the final thing Fortunately, our friend Garrick Van Buren over at the First Crack podcast was able to give me a little bit of advice on this. I saw lots of people wandering around with their little Bluetooth headsets, you know, where you clip the little thing over your ear. So you kind of look like a sort of human-like, lightweight version of Locutus of Borg. You know, you've got this thing clipped onto your ear and whatever. And I was thinking, well, couldn't you just do everything Bluetooth? I mean, you have a little earphone, your MP3 player would play wirelessly, so you don't have this cord going up. You could tie it into your laptop, you could record a podcast, you could do voice recognition. Wouldn't it be nice sitting in the office? You know, you come into the office, you clip this on, you answer your phone with it. You don't have cords going everywhere. So I wanted to kind of see, you know, you can find references to Bluetooth headsets in the context of phones, but what about in the context of MP3 players or laptops or whatever? So I emailed Garrick, because we had really good wireless access, actually, both at the hotel and at the conference, so I was very happy for that. Really good as things go. I mean, it wasn't great, but much better than I thought. And Garrick was nice enough to email back that he, in fact, his early podcasts used the Bluetooth headset into his laptop for recording. But apparently the problem with Bluetooth is you have to pair devices, so you can't have a connection from your headset to both your laptop and your MP3 player, you know, and your cell phone. So I guess if you paired it to your laptop and did everything through your laptop, you know, played your MP3s through your laptop, you use Skype to do your calls or whatever, then maybe it would work. And I wonder if you had multiple Bluetooth receivers, you know, could you pair your phone to your laptop and then your laptop to your headset? But that gets kind of messy. So apparently there are some issues with the technology there. But I would have liked to have seen a demo, because I think, and I even talked to some vendor, like Nokia or Nextel maybe? I don't know. You can tell it didn't really matter to me, because he's like, yeah, that'd be interesting, but we don't sell that. Don't know. We use Motorola. Motorola's not here. Great idea. You know, because I was thinking, even if you're a lecturer and you want to do some voice amplification in a classroom setting, just clip this little thing on. It could record you. It could amplify you and run you through the house speakers. You know, it just, there seems to be some potential there. But, yeah, I don't know. So, that was my thought on EDUCAUSE. That's, you know, there's more to it than that, I guess. I mean, went to some interesting sessions and things, but that's it in a nutshell. So, I figured I would share those, and if you have any thoughts or comments, then by all means, hey, let me know, and we will continue the discussion.
He's not sharp enough to be a geek, but enough of a geek to be a dweeb. It's Eric Larson's Dweeb Thoughts on the EricCast.
Oh yeah, I've got to give Matt a call and see how his fall's doing. We need to do an interview with Matt. I miss my friends. The random emotional outburst. My wife Ruth was emailing some of her old friends who are scattered across the country, and you know I miss hanging out with them. I've, you know, make new friends but keep the old, you know, silver, gold, platinum, titanium, that old, you know, children's nursery rhyme deal thing. We've made new friends, and we haven't, like, lost the old. It's not like, hey, forget you, you know, you're gone. But still, you know, you don't, when people are halfway across the country, you just don't talk to them quite as much. Imagine that. Though I was saying I should get the webcams and things set up and do the MSN chat. Or I've been playing with iNeen just a little bit. Anyone heard of iNeen? I-N-E-E-N, which apparently is like a video chat Skype sort of thing. But I don't have anyone on iNeen. So that doesn't help any. One other little miscellaneous comment, and that was that I was listening to Mike O'Connor's Sex and Podcasting, the podcast that has nothing to do with sex. He just puts it in the title to get your attention. It's kind of sad that I know Mike O'Connor's tagline as well as my own or anyone else's. But he was talking about rural development and the notion of you know, putting money into small communities and things. I need to find out where Mike lives, because he talks about being in western Wisconsin, and my folks are in western Wisconsin, in beautiful Ellsworth, Wisconsin, which is just north of Red Wing. If you're not in the Twin Cities metropolitan area, that means nothing to you. But if you are, then hey, great. But they've got 10 acres on top of a hill, gorgeous property. Long story there, I'll talk about someday. But Mike's got to be somewhere around there, I guess. I don't know. I mean, you can only, you know, you can't, if you're fairly close to the Twin Cities, then you know, you can't get too far away. You know, that's kind of axiomatic, I guess. But Yeah, we know Western Wisconsin well. Some very beautiful countryside around there. And my gut reaction is, with the advent of the internet, a lot of what I do, I could work from home. Not every single day, but I could certainly work from home with my internet connection and whatever. And if I've got a decent internet connection, whether I'm 20 minutes from work or an hour and 20 minutes from work doesn't really matter, because this connection is the same. Apparently, the satellite internet, the two-way satellite internet, isn't great. And I really don't know how well it works with something that's supposed to be fairly synchronous, like a terminal server connection, let alone a Breeze WebEx type meeting. I don't know. But hey, even my folks have DSL, and they're pretty much out in the middle of nowhere. So I think that things like DSL have penetrated the rural America pretty well. And I don't know. He had some interesting comments on that. And I'm wondering, with diesel prices going up, gas prices in general, but apparently, I was kind of out of the loop when I was down in Orlando, but apparently diesel prices have just skyrocketed while I was gone. I don't know, because I don't buy diesel. But if diesel prices go up, then it's going to get really expensive to live out in a rural environment, because you've got more travel, you lose the economies of scale for shopping and things. Here in the city, we've got our Walmarts, which crush the opposition. Walmart, Home Depot, whatever, you can still buy things fairly cheap. But if you're out in the middle of nowhere and either Walmart has a monopoly, or you don't have a Walmart and you have a local store that can't afford to buy in these huge quantities, then prices are going to go up. And if it gets too expensive, then, on the other hand, maybe you go drive into the city once a week and stock up. But if you're driving your vehicle into the city, and then you're hauling back, dozens and dozens of pounds of supplies, basically, then that's expensive. So maybe there is no hope for living in a rural environment. But, I don't know. I like that environment. So, on the other hand, I like friends and community and connecting with people. So, I probably would not do well living out in the middle of nowhere for a long, long while. So, random comments on life in ruralness, I guess. Hope that made sense. And once again, I'd love to hear if you have any thoughts on that, because I think there's something. Yeah, there's some talk there about where do we want to live and why do we want to live where we do. Trade-offs anywhere you look. Variety of opinion would be good. So, hey, call in and share on that, too.
Podcasting. It's like TiVo for your ears. You're listening to The Aircast.
TiVo is a registered trademark of TiVo Incorporated. All rights reserved. The Aircast is not affiliated with TiVo Incorporated in any way, shape, or form. Please don't sue us.
Joanne fits into that same category there of Matt. I've got to get Joanne, I know you listen to these. We've got to do an interview with Joanne, because Joanne is a fascinating person who has led a very interesting life. So we should fire up Skype or something and have her chat about her dweeb thoughts, philosophy and technology and all that stuff. She is would be amply equipped to discuss that kind of thing. Okay, so I had promised that I was going to readdress Brandon's comments, and this is going to get interesting going live to hard drive. Brandon called into the Aircast listener feedback line, 206-339-3742. Please call. And left two, both very interesting and disparate comments. So I'm going to play them in, and hopefully I can pause between them, probably fairly awkwardly, and we'll comment on them, because you can't comment on both of them at once, because, as I say, they're different topics. So we'll start with first things first, which, if memory serves, was, it's been a week, hey, I'm kind of rusty, was dealing with the concept of attention that I've been talking about for so long. So let's see if I can pull this in here.
Hi, Eric, this is Brandon from Michigan. I happen to catch wind of the Minnesota podcast directory from Sex and Podcasting, which I found on iTunes. Anyway, I was listening to the October 9 show with, I guess you're talking about tagging, which I wanted to respond to a little bit. It seems like we're kind of getting to the point where computers are becoming more of a commodity, and everyone gets to use them all the time now, and we need to change it from a technical medium to a medium that actually serves a purpose. And I think that the tagging thing is actually a good step in the right direction, so I can say that I'm interested in, learning how to play the drums, and instead of you know, meticulously going through every set I find and finding all these different links and everything, I can just, you know, hopefully use some sort of a tagging program that will tell me, like, what every popular drum site is and, you know, eventually get better. And you kind of further your own interests that way. But anyway, on the other side, you were talking about the Matthew 25.
Oh, and we're going to talk about Matthew 25 momentarily. So, see, I thought I could maybe pause that and get somewhat close. So, okay, tagging stuff. Absolutely. So thank you, Brandon. I totally agree. Yes, computer prices are dropping. They're getting more common, et cetera, et cetera. We need to make the technology more accessible. Absolutely. Amen. You betcha, dare you know. The thing is, and I mentioned this last week, and I'm getting kind of repetitive and redundant and repeating my words continually over and over. Haha. But the tagging is a good first step, but the problem with the tagging is that you, the listener or the viewer or whatever, have to decide to proactively go out and choose to tag something. I mean, I use Delicious, but I have like maybe 10 things tagged, because why would I go and tag something in Delicious? And I know that if I managed all my bookmarks through Delicious, then it wouldn't, you know, my bookmarks wouldn't be the pile of junk they are. I could manage them across platforms and stuff. If it were a little bit easier, because my little JavaScript, you know, tag this in Delicious stuff never seems to quite work right when I need it, and it's a pain to put all that information in, and then I have to think about tags. I mean, I'm not that bright, so when I'm trying to figure out what do I tag this as, that's a challenge. I gotta go take a nap after that. So I don't know. That kind of works, but it's sort of awkward. And I was just thinking as I was re-listening to your comments, Brandon. So I was just thinking about how the dream of something like Google was that Google was gonna bring the good content to the surface, because it was gonna look at how you link stuff, and sort of, I mean, that's what I keep trying to get to is this attention thing behind the scenes. You know, how can we take the spare raw computing power that we have and put it to use and let the computer do the hard work and have it say, kind of like Pandora. Have I talked about Pandora and your musical tastes, where you say, I like this kind of group, you know, give me stuff similar to it, and then you rate it, you know? Of course, the secret behind Pandora is that they had a bunch of paid professionals rate everything in the first place. So it's kind of, you know, it's sort of like the first Macintosh that supposedly was running with a whole bunch of Apple IIe's sitting under the table. You know, it's that kind of thing of, well, the reason Pandora works is because a bunch of people did a bunch of work ahead of time. But couldn't we have the computer say, gee, you seem to be spending a lot of time on these pages or clicking around a lot on these pages. That means you're probably interested in that. Or the Amazon stuff of, well, people who bought this book like this other book. The drumming example is really good. How do you get to, you know, what good drum sites are? Then at some point, it ends up being, it takes some work to get there, but usually then you have real-life human beings at some point where, you know, if there are places to go for certain information. You know, if you're into making DVDs and video CDs and compression and that kind of stuff, now I won't remember it, but there's a site out there on video CDs, and whatever. Yeah, great example, Eric. Huh? But, you know, I mean, that is the place to go. That is where the discussion is. So there probably is, like, the place to go for drum information, and I guess you kind of find it out through word of mouth. But that seems, so tagging and word of mouth, I mean, it just doesn't quite seem right. The problem is that any system can be gamed, you know, and all the stuff that I kind of dabble in just to stay active in what's out there, on how to make money with Google and AdSense and boosting your ratings and whatever. In fact, when was I ranting about this? I was ranting about this in the last podcast. I haven't done anything about this yet, but those lovely folks at what was it? Like Nevada SEO or Reno SEO? Was that it? Search engine optimization. Where basically they're spamming their links into comments in blogs. And what I figured out is because I had made a passing reference to Reno, Nevada, because there was someone in Reno, Nevada searching for Carrie Byron stuff and not finding it on my site. And I'm like, dude, if you want Carrie Byron stuff on my blog, it's become a running joke. It's not that hard to find. Just click on that link. But because I've got StatCounter tracking on there, I could see that the poor guy, I'm sure it was a guy, women don't really hunt for Carrie Byron stuff, never clicked on the mother load of Carrie Byron information. So I commented on this poor guy from Reno. Well, that means I had a post about Reno. And so what this guy did at this search engine place is did a search and blogger for Reno, came across my post on Reno, and made a pretty incoherent comment saying, wow, hey, great post. By the way, speaking of Reno, I'm selling this property at this site. And if you went to this site, then you'd be able to find this information on property from this site. And so I'd really appreciate it if you gave me some links to this site. And if you do, I'll give you some in return. That way we can promote you to other sites, like my site right here, this site. So just the fact that he posted that throws a bunch of links to his site into my blog, which means that Google searches my blog and says, wow, this Reno property site must be really popular because this Eric guy in his blog, he's got all these links to it. We better boost its view, its importance in Google. Well, no, I don't think anything of it, but you can game the system that way and boost your ratings. So having computers do things doesn't work. I mean, it's just it's this arms race of attention, basically. It's back to the attention thing. Huh. Can you tell I'm interested and passionate about the topic? Yeah. So I'm still just trying to figure out how we can have computers do a better job of you know, taking some of the work off of people rather than having people go in and type these tags. I mean, as you say, it's a great first step. I just want to, you know, think about what steps two or three or four might be. So that's enough on attention and tagging. I'd love to hear more comments from someone other than myself. But let's go on to comments on Matthew 25. Matthew 25? Was that it? Whatever. Let me back this up because I don't remember. So we'll have Brandon repeat it. But what I was talking about was the Matthew effect. The rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And people talk about the Matthew effect as a you know, business thing or a societal thing. And I was talking about how Jesus in this chapter is talking a lot about the kingdom of God and how you know a lot of people. And I remember this because you know. A decade and a half ago, I wasn't a Christian, and I would say, "Look, you know, hey, I'm fine with Jesus and you know moral teaching and in things like the Sermon on the Mount, Book of Matthew. That's great. All this you know crazy, oh, you know, the spiritual Jesus being God stuff. Oh, let's just throw that out and look at his teachings." And my point was is that that's not really you can't say Jesus is this great moral teacher. Because what he taught about was that there's a God and a heaven and a hell and all that sort of stuff. So Brandon actually has a really good philosophically coherent position here. So let's hear his closing comments.
That way. But anyway, on the other side, you were talking about the Matthew 25 sort of business, and I personally am not Christian. I do like. I'm interested in what Jesus said, but I don't have the message and all of that. But anyway, it seems like he was asking people to do a lot of good things, but I don't get the threat so much. Like there's this whole idea of you have to worry about not doing the right thing because of the fact that there will be retribution eventually. And maybe I just live in a more idealistic sort of world, but I'd rather do it because I want to, because I think it is the right thing to do, than to have to worry about being condemned. So, anyway, I think that's kind of an outdated idea, where you have to tell people, like, threaten them with a stick to say, do the right thing, or this is what's going to happen to you, instead of where we are now. I think we're a little more civilized, and we can say, if you have the means to do the right thing, do the right thing. Anyway, thanks. For the show, I was pretty interested in it. Thank you. Bye.
So there you go. Thank you, Brandon, for those comments. Well, here's the thing, and I would love to continue this conversation, and I mean either me and Brandon, and hey, it'll be a whole new podcast, or I would love to get more opinions from other people. And as I say, I mean you know personal background. I became a Christian in 1995, so it's been 10 years. And before that, kind of seeking, searching in 94 or whatever. But my high school years, because that puts me to like mid-college, it kind of tells you how old I am. But high school, early college, whatever, you know, my experience with Christianity was, you know, Bob Tilton, Jimmy Swagger, Jim Baker, you know, I knew that. You know, I knew what all this Christian junk was about. And so I had a lot to get over to realize, okay, the people aren't, you know, the people aren't the message. You know, it's not about what people do and stuff. And in fact, that would be what I would say, to comment on what on Brandon's points, that what Jesus was talking about wasn't here's how you ought to live. Obviously, he does talk about that. Here's the way to live, but it's not about the living. What Jesus said and what Jesus taught starts to make more sense in the context of there is a God. Not in the hey, here's a good way to live, and if you don't live this way, you know, big bad God is gonna, you know, have a temper tantrum like a 2-year-old and whack, down you go. That's not the context in which Jesus was speaking to his audience, because he was speaking to typically to a bunch of observant Jews who believed that there is a monotheistic God of the universe. And so then, you know, and what he was doing was trying to pull people out of that. Hey, you know, we're good. We got things set. We do this and that. We've got our rituals. We've got our habits, and God's fine with that. Because the thing is, and if you don't believe this, that's fine. I mean, that's an issue. I think that's a bad decision that has eternal consequences based on what Jesus said. But you can be internally consistent and say, look, I don't believe that junk. I don't believe in God. I don't believe that there's a heaven and a hell. Okay, fine. I think there's reasons that we should. But anyway, the theology is, here's the argument. Here's the message is that there's a God, and we as people, as humans, don't care, fell out of that. That's the whole Adam and Eve story of the fall in the garden. And whether you believe that literally or not, Jesus did reference it. So there's something there that somehow humanity is outside of what God wants. God is a personal God who cares. You know, it's not just the watchmaker God who kind of spun things up and you know doesn't. I mean, this is why people refer to Jesus as the Son of God, God incarnate. That there actually is a relationship there. But anyway, so we, by our free choice, have said, look, we want to do things our way. We don't want to do things God's way. And I mean, not to put words in Brandon's mouth, but I think he'd probably agree with that. I mean, he's like, look, I'm not a Christian, and I think that we should, you know, do good of our own accord. That's fine. I mean, okay. But that says, I don't want to do the God thing. So the deal is that it's not that, you know, God doesn't have temper tantrums. Now that I have a 2-year-old, I know what they're like. That's not God's wrath. You know, it's a cause and effect thing, that if you choose to be outside of God and what God wants and say, I want to do things on my own, that's bad. Bad things happen. That's what the wrath thing is. It's not a I'm going to proactively choose to go out and be mean to you. It's just that's what happens. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, like talking about the wrath of gravity. You know, if you step off the building, then gravity's, you know, wrath is going to, well, I mean, it's a metaphor, because, you know, yeah, gravity will affect you necessarily. I mean, you are going to plummet to the ground, and if it's more than a few feet, you're going to be very, very hurt and possibly dead. So that's the image that we're talking about, is that if you say, I don't want anything to do with God, then you're outside of God's, well, grace is the Christian term. Now, what's interesting, and here's an aside that's kind of, you know, kind of relevant here. I'm talking about our recent hurricanes and things. There's a doctrine out there that's called common grace. Because the question is, why do quote-unquote bad people do good things? You know, if humanity's so bad, why is humanity basically pretty good? I mean, really, you know, despite all the bad things that happen in today's world, it's, you know, we people are pretty good to each other. You know, Christians, non-Christians alike, whatever, you know, humanity, it's pretty good. Why is that? Well, the argument is, God has given a measure of grace, that it's not that humanity is inherently good, because Jesus was very clear about that. It's not that humanity is inherently good, but God is giving goodness to people so that, you know, to some measure they're decent to one another. And then the argument is that Christians are under God's grace and have, you know, like special grace or whatever. As I say, I haven't done a big study on this, and yet we're still human and we still sin, which is why Christians do bad things. Anyway, someone had mentioned in the context of Hurricane Katrina and the looting in New Orleans after the societal infrastructure broke down, that that's an example of the absence of common grace. That that's what happens when common grace weakens and people do decide that I'm going to go looting and pillaging and raping and killing or whatever. And we're not talking about, you know, stealing some toilet paper from the 7-Eleven because you need it. We're talking about stealing 8 crates of toilet paper from the 7-Eleven. Like, well, you don't need that. You know, or stealing TVs from the Walmart down the street. It's like, you know, dude, you don't need a TV to survive in a flooded city. You know, okay. And the interesting argument, and I buy this metaphor works, is that what we talk about and what Jesus talked about as hell would be the absence of any of God's grace. It really is the ultimate decision of, you know, hey, I don't need God. And at that point, God says, okay, then I'm out of your life. That's fine. You made that choice. Okay. I'm out of here. And it's not a whiny, you know, temper tantrum, I'm taking my toys thing. It's like, look, you are an autonomous human being. That's how I created you. You're making your decision. Okay. And then heaven, of course, would be the fullness of God's grace. So you have all of God's grace. But hell would basically be none of God's grace at all. What's going to happen? Well, if you stick a bunch of people in the room, they're going to act totally as they naturally are, which would be like New Orleans looting, you know, squared several times over, you know, cubed or to some power or something. It's a math thing I don't really get. But, you know, I mean, you kind of see where you basically, people just do whatever they darn well please and they aren't nice to each other at all. That's the doctrine thing there. I mean, but it really isn't, what Jesus was talking about really wasn't, hey, you ought to be a good person, and if you aren't a good person, God's going to get you. I can see. I mean, you could read it that way. There are parts that you can read where that's, you know. But really, if you look at the whole chunk of what Jesus taught, that's not what he's getting at. What he's saying is, basically, you know, you ought to be a good person, but you know you're not going to be. You know you're going to have problems. You're going to be selfish. You're going to be whatever. That's fine. That's why there's forgiveness. That's why God still loves you, yet, and then this is the whole Christian sacrifice thing, where still that justice needs to be fulfilled. You know, God can't just say, oh, well, never mind. You know, what kind of judge, you know, there's a metaphor out there, I heard on a commercial, it was really kind of funny, where whatever came before him, he just, you know, banged the gavel down and say, not guilty. And someone would say, well, I just didn't know, not guilty. I didn't feel like doing that. Not guilty. And at some point, it's like, hey, wait a minute. You know, what kind of justice is that? So it's that balance of justice and mercy. One comment, if you're thinking, wait, where's all this coming from and stuff? The rich young ruler, the rich man, whatever, who goes to Jesus and says, okay, you know, teacher, what must I do to be saved? What must I do to inherit the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus said to him, well, because guys basically like, oh, you know, I'll do whatever. And Jesus said, okay, sell all you have and give it to the poor. And the man went away dejected because he had a bunch of stuff. And I used to read that and think, well, what Jesus is saying is that we should all be poor and live these ascetic lives and not have any stuff. Well, that's not the point of that teaching. if you look at it, and I would argue Jesus knew the guy's heart and you know, knew what the answer was going to be, so it's there as an example. Is if you say, "Oh wow, you know, this is just awesome. I really love what you're talking about. Oh, that's so great. What should I do? I'll do anything to follow you. I want to inherit the kingdom of heaven. I want to, you know, I want this." It's like, okay, do you really want it? Here, tell you what. What about if you sell all your stuff? Just get away to the poor. Well, if the guy really wanted this, he'd say, okay. You know, that's the story of Zacchaeus who met Jesus and was convicted and realized, yeah, I'm not the great and glorious person that I think I am, and said, I'll pay back everybody double. I'm changing my life. This guy said, but I have so much stuff. And didn't follow. Well, that's because the stuff was more important to him than what Jesus was saying, you know? So, anyway, I just, Brandon, I personally thank you for the call. I would love to keep talking about this because it's, I mean, this is important stuff, you know? So I appreciate the points and things, by all means. We're coming at it from two different perspectives. You know, it's back, you know, it's that, so it's the context in which Jesus is teaching. Yeah, if he were teaching saying, you know, you better be a good person or there's this big, you know, evil God that's going to get you. I agree that would be a bad, outdated teaching. But I don't agree that if we could just liberate people to be the good, truly good, inherently good people they are, that we'd be in better shape. Because I don't think people are that way. I do think that that we are inherently selfish, you know. And we do lots of good things. That's fine. But when measured up against a perfectly good God of the universe, if that exists, hey, if it doesn't exist, then we're all pretty good. But if that does exist, then we're not going to measure up, no matter how hard we try. You know, it's kind of like swimming from California to Hawaii. You know, your Olympic swimmer is going to get further, but you just, no matter how hard you try, you're just not going to get there. So I don't know, interesting stuff, and I will close out the podcast because otherwise I'm going to be here all night. Please, all y'all, let me know what you think. Give me a call, 206-339-3742, spells out Eric on your phone, or shoot me an email, eric@ericast.com, and we'd love to keep the conversation going. So that is that. I am so happy to be back, so thank y'all for listening, for still being here after my absence, and I'll be back in a week to continue with whatever you guys phone in and call about, so please do that. Until next week, hey, take care.
Thanks for listening to the Ericast from ericast.com.
Visit us at www.ericast.com.